Booster.
Go.
Retro.
Go.
Vital.
We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in spaceflight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
Greetings from Florida's Space Coast, home of the most skilled aerospace workforce in America. I'm Jim Behnke, and this is the March 16th, 2013 edition of Space Talk, live on the air right here on WMMB. As the name implies, we're going to spend the next hour talking about our nation's space program in all of its various forms. Not just what NASA is doing, but what many others are doing or planning to do in space. From space tourism to mining asteroids to sending people to Mars, there are a lot of people talking about a lot of different ideas, and we're going to try to touch on a little bit of all of them on today's program. We're going to have that discussion with the help, expert help, I might add, of Jeff Carr, longtime friend who has served as spokesman for NASA and United Space Alliance and is now working with some of those new commercial space firms to help tell their story. Jeff's going to join us in just a few moments, and then later on in the program, we'll preview the planned launch this week of an Atlas V rocket from right here at Cape Canaveral. Plus, of course, we welcome your contributions to the program today. If you have any questions about the space program or would like to offer a comment about something we're discussing, feel free to give us a call. As usual, the number is 321-768-1240, or if you'd prefer to send us your question or comment via email, the address to use is spacetalking@aol.com. Hey, before we get to today's orbital inclinations, I just want to make sure that you've all heard the good news that NASA astronaut Kevin Ford and two of his cosmonaut colleagues safely returned to Earth last night after spending about 5 months aboard the International Space Station. The trio undocked from the station in their Soyuz spacecraft at about 7:45 last night Eastern Time, deorbited and landed about 3 hours later, safely touching down in Kazakhstan just a little bit after 11 o'clock last night. Rescue forces were quickly on the scene to recover the crew and secure the capsule, and everybody is reported to be in good shape. That leaves three people on board the station right now, currently commanded by astronaut Chris Hadfield, the first Canadian, by the way, to be designated skipper of the outpost. He'll remain in command now for the next few months and will be joined by three more crew members later this month when the next Soyuz launch is scheduled to fly from the Baikonur Cosmodrome. Okay, now it's time for my more or less weekly broadcast blog, Orbital Inclinations. A half century ago, a charismatic young president stood before the nation and threw down the challenge of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to the Earth, and to do it before the decade of the 1960s was out. At that time, in May of 1961, there was no spaceport on Merritt Island, no vehicle assembly building, no Launch Complex 39. Designs for the rockets and engines that would soon become part of the mighty Apollo Saturn V launch vehicle were in their early stages of development, but hadn't flown yet. In fact, when President Kennedy made his speech to Congress, we didn't yet have all the answers to all the questions about spaceflight. We didn't know exactly what the best way was to get to the moon and back. We didn't know how to do rendezvous and docking. We hadn't even done a spacewalk yet. Heck, by the time the president gave his speech on May 25th, the only American to have flown in space was Alan Shepard. And all he did, impressive as it was at the time, was to fly a great suborbital ballistic arc to the edge of space that only took 15 minutes from launch to splashdown. Nevertheless, the United States was in a Cold War with the Soviet Union. Getting to the moon first would be a symbol for the rest of the world of all that's right and good about our way of life. We had to win. We had to do whatever it took to beat the Soviets and to make the deadline that the president had set for us. with NASA and our space program solidly on a Cold Wartime footing, the money, manpower, and material resources were made available to find the answers, solve the problems, gain the experience, and accomplish the goal just 8 years later. And it's important to note that even before we landed on the moon with Apollo 11, during the previous 6 months, we had went to the moon twice without landing, first during Apollo 8 and then again on Apollo 10. In case you weren't around back then or have forgotten, there were plenty of smart people who said the whole notion of flying to the moon was impossible and a waste of time and money. There were too many unknowns and the risks would be too great. There was no way we could get it done during the short time available. And when we did send Apollo 8 to the moon without a lunar module, and again during Apollo 10 when the lunar module Snoopy flew the dress rehearsal for the landing, there were cries throughout the nation and the space community complaining about what a waste it was to fly that long distance and not land. Well, now here we are more than 40 years later with many of the most fundamental problems of spaceflight clearly understood, and with enough experience gained to have built an engineering miracle in orbit in the form of the International Space Station. We now have an increasingly reliable and credible commercial space industry that is taking on some of the tasks of spaceflight that were previously the purview of only NASA and the federal government. Commercial launchings of commercial satellites are common. Private companies are lofting cargo to the space station, getting ready for space tourism and investigating mining the asteroids for precious metals. It is time for new ideas and new approaches for pioneering the space frontier. All of which brings me to the Inspiration Mars Foundation. As you may have heard, Inspiration Mars is an effort spearheaded by Dennis Tito, the world's first official space tourist and a very wealthy man. Their plan is to send two humans, a man and a woman, on a 500-plus day journey to Mars and back, and to launch the bare-bones mission in just 5 years in 2018. The crew will likely be a married couple who are past their childbearing years. They will have little room to float around. Everything they need for the trip, food, water, and supplies, will be packed inside their spacecraft. There will be no landing at Mars, no spacewalks, not a single luxury. The hazards will include the long-term effects of exposure to weightlessness and radiation, as well as the psychological and social challenges of always being locked up in the same room as your spouse for months on end with nowhere to escape. Many smart people within the space community are saying the whole Inspiration Mars notion is impossible and a waste of time and money. There are too many unknowns and the risks are too great. There is no way it can get done during the short time available. And besides, why go all the way to Mars and not land? Sound familiar? I'm just old enough to remember Apollo and the things I heard from the naysayers back then. Apollo seemed an impossible dream, and yet we did it. Today, the Inspiration Mars Foundation is daring humanity to take another impossible leap of faith and imagination. Sure, there are plenty of questions that need to be answered and funds to be raised. Not everyone is going to like all the answers. Inspiration Mars may require taking on more risk than we have become willing to accept since Apollo. But if this effort can jumpstart human space exploration beyond Earth orbit, or get kids of all ages excited about spaceflight and exploring strange new worlds, then I think this is something we should not be so quick to dismiss outright, as I know way too many people have already done. We didn't give up on Apollo. Now let's not give up so fast on Inspiration Mars. And that's Orbital Inclinations for this edition of Space Talk. Okay, as we pause now for our quick break, please stay tuned as Jeff Carr joins us when we return to talk some more about Inspiration Mars and other space-related developments in the private sector. Plus, a little later on, we'll preview this week's planned launch of the Atlas V. All that and more coming right up. I'm Jim Behnke, and you are listening to Space Talk on WMMB.
If you missed part of the show, catch the podcast, Space Talk, in the on-demand section at WMMBAM.com. If it's happening in space, Jim Behnke is there. Okay, well, not in space, but he's all about it. This is Space Talk on WMMB.
And welcome back to Space Talk, everybody. 321-768-1240 is the number to call to participate in our program. You can also send your questions or comments in an email to spacetalking@aol.com. Okay, my guest today is my longtime friend, Jeff Carr. Jeff is a former NASA spokesman and shuttle mission commentator, and then for many years, he was director of communications at United Space Alliance. He is now the senior vice president for aerospace at Griffin Communications Group in Houston. In that position, Jeff now finds himself working with some of the companies and organizations that are, I think, shaking things up a bit in the space community, including the Inspiration Mars Foundation, of which I just talked about during this week's Orbital Inclinations. Jeff is going to try to help us understand what this is all about as he talks with us from his home near Houston. Mr. Carr, how are you doing in the great state of Texas?
Hi, Jim. It's been a long time, but it's great to talk to you again.
It's good to hear your voice, absolutely. Hey, let's talk about your involvement with Inspiration Mars Foundation through Griffin Communications Group. Talk about that relationship real quick. Set the stage for our discussion.
Sure, I'd like to, but to start off, though, I have to say that your opening monologue was inspiring, and it reminded me of an op-ed that I read in an aerospace trade publication about a month or so ago that was penned by Jerry Ross, who is the most flown and most spacewalk experienced astronaut in the history of human spaceflight. He wrote that it's time for America not to withdraw within itself, but to dream big dreams again.
Yeah.
It's time for Americans to unite in accomplishing big goals again and to reap the benefits in our educational systems, technical advancement, and the economy that were realized when we first journeyed to the moon. His words couldn't have been better timed and more relevant to where we are in our space program today, and I couldn't have been more pleased with your setup of this, you know, this topic.
It's so important to talk about, you know, what we're doing with Inspiration Mars, but why you're doing it, why Dennis Tito's organization is doing it, and we'll get into the whole STEM angle to this, but let's go back and set the stage. You're involved because of Griffin having the help to do the communications.
You bet. We were really honored to have Dennis Tito and his team reach out to us to help launch the public dialogue on this amazing opportunity that occurs next in 2018. Basically, every 15 years, the planets literally align, offering a unique opportunity for this fast free return mission to Mars and back to Earth in only 501 days. And Dennis's team had conducted an exhaustive feasibility study to find out what it would take and what technologies would be available to do this, and found that this is a feasible mission. It's a challenging mission, both in the time that remains to do it, but in terms of addressing some of the gaps in present technology and systems that you would need to address for a long-term deep space mission. But when we got the call, there was no question we wanted to be a part of it. I think we had some skepticism, just like everyone has in the beginning. But after understanding the fact that they themselves started the process with a very healthy degree of skepticism and challenged themselves to prove that this was a feasible mission, we knew we were all in.
I want to elaborate on the skepticism in a moment, but first let's set up the credibility that Dennis Tito and the other folks that are on board already bring to this in terms of understanding spaceflight and the health issues and all that. Talk a little bit about the team that's been put together for this.
Starts with Dennis. I mean, you introduced him as the world's first space tourist and a very wealthy man. Well, before any of that happened, he was actually one of the first Americans to earn an aeronautics and astronautics engineering degree, and just within months of achieving that, he found himself working at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, given the job of designing a trajectory of Mars to Mars of Mariner 4.
Yeah.
He was a rocket scientist first, and I think his desire to kind of get back to his roots and work with some of the designers of this mission to determine the feasibility it's almost we call this mission a fast free return mission. Well, this is kind of a fast free return, you know, mission for Dennis in a personal way. He's coming full circle back to the things that stirred him and to get involved in the space program at a time when it was inspiring people and it was, based on a can-do, sky-is-the-limit kind of an attitude. And he's looking to restore this, but just not for himself, but for his children, his grandchildren, and for all of America. And he calls this a mission for America. And I think that's soundly appropriate.
Yeah, and this, you know, so many announcements have been made, and we could talk some more about some of the other clients that Griffin has, but so many announcements have been made about this entrepreneur effort and this scheme, if you will, to go make money and do this. This is not about a commercial venture. This is not about making a profit. My understanding is this is just to go do it, and that's why it's inspirational.
That's exactly right. You know, we're seeing the rapid diversification of the space industry from what was a dual sector industry supporting civil and military programs, relying on cost plus fee contracts, and then we've seen the stimulation of a commercial sector that's still servicing the civil and military sectors but also private enterprise with more fixed price and incentivized contracts. But now we're seeing the opening of a new field, the philanthropic field. And in this case, the philanthropy is involved with giving Americans the reason, the impetus, and the opportunity to dream again and think big about space and to see space exploration as an attainable and motivating enterprise.
So let's talk about the skepticism. I want to make this I don't want to make this a big commercial for what you're doing. Let's talk about the hard questions. I mean, what's the rocket? What's the spacecraft? Where's the money? Where's the beef in all of this right now, Jeff?
I think the skepticism is warranted. And I think any member of the team would agree with that and tell you that if you don't have a healthy dose of skepticism and you don't understand the magnitude of the challenge. But what we do know is that, thanks to NASA's investment in human spaceflight over several decades now and the growing capabilities of the U.S. space industry, most of the systems, vehicles, and technologies that you need to do this mission are readily available. Did you know that there are more space launch and crew vehicles in service or in development today than in the entire history of civil space combined?
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing, and I think part of the skepticism is that out of all those that are in development, you know, which ones are actually going to make it and fly, and then which ones are going to be made available for a trip such as, you know, fast free return trajectory to Mars?
Sure, that is a big question, and even when you assemble the baseline configuration that is going to optimize the chances for this mission, and that really is the focus. I mean, it's a wide open field right now. The Inspiration Mars team is talking to a lot of people in industry who have a variety of different solutions, but ultimately the decision isn't going to be a lowest bidder kind of decision. It's going to be based on what gives this this mission the best chance of success. Even so, there are going to be some major technical challenges. There are gaps that the technology, today's technology, doesn't quite address, having to do with life support,
sure,
having to do with unprecedented reentry velocities, and as you mentioned, crew health, both physical and mental health.
A lot of folks, Jeff, want to know, will this thing launch from the Cape here? And you know, I'm hoping there's a good shot at that. But my question when you ask that is, will the Eastern Range, will the federal government allow a launch like this to take place? I mean, what are the safety hurdles that you think we're going to have to pass through, to hoops we're going to have to jump through to make it something where you can launch and be allowed to launch without doing some private little thing in some other commercial spaceport?
Well, I don't think so. Perhaps the most encouraging aspects of all of this are the signs that the government is actively embracing the entrepreneurial initiatives. And NASA in particular is actively embracing its can-do heritage, but in a new way, in the role of a facilitator. Now, it's not that they're no longer at the leading edge of space technology and operations and explorations. I mean, really, on the contrary, they're leading the effort to do those really hard things that can fundamentally change the way we travel, live, and work in space. And that, of course, can spin off and spark new commercial enterprise. But NASA is also a huge virtual repository of experience, knowledge, and data that can really fuel and accelerate the growth of the commercial sector and private enterprise like Inspiration Mars. And it's support that they're desperately going to need in the future to address what their missions are and to do it in an affordable way. And they're finding ways to make that happen through Space Act agreements. And in the case of Inspiration Mars, there's already a Space Act agreement in place with the NASA Ames Research Center to address one of those fundamental challenges that I mentioned, which is how we're going to deal with reentry heating and reentry
And Jeff, stand by right there. We're going to pause now for our five-minute built-in hold, get you caught up in the latest news, weather, and sports. Then we'll keep talking about all this with Jeff Carr. I'm Jim Bank. You're listening to Space Talk right here on WMMB.
Space Talk is back in a minute. Call Jim now at 768-1240. With everything you need to know about America's space program, here is Jim Bankey.
And welcome back, everybody, to our second half of Space Talk on WMMB. Our phone lines and online inbox are open for your questions or comments. The phone number 321-768-1240. The email address is spacetalking@aol.com. Before we get back to our conversation about Inspiration Mars with the one and only Jeff Carr, I want to tell you that it's still not too late to get outside. Immediately after sunset, take a look for the comet Pan-STARRS. It is moving farther from the sun and will therefore get a little dimmer each day, but it's still worth making the attempt for the next few days anyway, next week or so. My wife and I did go out last Wednesday, parked outside one of the gates to the Duda Ranch west of I-95, about as west, I think, as you can go in Brevard. And we're joined by a couple other families who found the same spot worthy of an attempt. And about 20 minutes or so after sunset, I was able to see the comet very clearly with my binoculars. It was kind of hard to see with the naked eye. Didn't pick up very well on the iPhone at all. But you do need an unobstructed view of the sky to the west, as unobstructed as possible. And then when it starts getting dark, look right above where the sun has just set and just kind of be patient. Again, binoculars would be a big help. You'll see a very distinct patch of light. I mean, once you see it, it's there. It's just totally obvious. Very clear tail pointing straight up. Comets are just rare enough that I think you really do owe it to yourself to make the effort. We might have another big bright one come by us here this holiday season. Anyway, if you do have any luck, you know, I would love to hear about your experience at spacetalking@aol.com. Drop me a note. Tell me all about it. Okay, we're going to get back to our conversations right now with Jeff Carr, Senior Vice President of Aerospace for the Griffin Communications Group in Houston. We're talking about Inspiration Mars and the daring trip to send two humans to Mars and back again, a 500-day trip, man and woman, married perhaps, locked up in a tin can. It's going to be gruesome. Jeff, you were talking before the break about how NASA was involved, and I had to cut you off. We were talking about the reentry speeds and the heat shields and some of the work Ames Research Center is doing. They're on board with this, aren't they?
Absolutely. There's a reimbursable Space Act agreement that's in place right now that will allow the Inspiration Mars Foundation to reimburse NASA for its special expertise in engineering and knowledge. And of course, reentry thermal protection is an area that Ames has special expertise in. And again, I think it's a terrific indication of NASA embracing its can-do heritage in a new way. And this is really very good news. I would expect to see more Space Act agreements in the future with some of the other centers that support key development efforts as well.
Can you talk about a little bit about the money, at least what we do know? We know that Dennis has committed his personal funding for, I guess, a couple of years. I see reports that that's a couple hundred million dollars. Do you have any kind of clue as to what the handle is on the final price tag and where that money might be coming from?
No, not really. And frankly, that's what the first couple of years is going to be about. We don't see major hardware solutions being purchased in the first couple of years. We're going to be continuing to do the critical engineering that's got to be done to address those gaps that we talked about and to establish the correct baseline configuration to go forward with on this. And Dennis has, you know, he's put his money where his heart is and is going to be challenging other great Americans with the kind of resources that are needed to make this happen. To come and join the initiative, but Dennis is going to bankroll the first 2 years to get this program up and running, and in the meantime, really job one, if not shortly thereafter, has got to be continuing to build the bank for this initiative through the Inspiration Mars Foundation.
Now we know the planets aligned for this interesting trajectory that makes a lot of this possible. 2018. That doesn't come around again till something in the 2020s. Is that something like that?
Every 15 years. So.
Every 15 years. So 2023 or 2033, I guess.
Right.
I guess what I'm going with this, Jeff, is what's the timeline? I mean, at some point you got to make a series of go, no-go decisions to get to the launch pad. You know, is there some point where you got to have a certain amount of money available with certain amount of hardware and procedures in place and contracts and agreements in place?
Sure. Oh, sure. But this is all groundbreaking work, Jim. There's no program management paradigm that applies directly to what's being done here. Before the married couple even launches, this program is going, boldly where no man or woman has gone before.
For sure.
And so we're engaging some of the brightest minds in the industry. Joe Rothenberg, who people in this industry know and respect very well,
sure.
Who has a tremendous amount of experience and knowledge in program management as well as entrepreneurial initiatives, is leading our advisory committee. And we anticipate bringing on more people that can help with the program management plan and schedule based on the early engineering that's got to be completed, and based on fundraising and based on negotiations with potential partners in this to make sure that we cross the finish line on time.
Well, and Jeff, Mars is only part of the title of this thing. Inspiration is the other part. So while we're so focused on the technology and the hardware and the procedures, the inspiration part, the fact that this is really being set up, as you say, a mission for America to inspire and to do the science, technology, engineering, math, educational stuff. I mean, what's the big STEM outreach plan here? What's going to be neat about what we could do to take advantage of this this whole program?
Well, this is evolving, but there's incredible potential, and it has a lot to do with why Dennis calls this a mission for America, because it has this incredible potential to generate new knowledge and experience and to fully engage the American public in, this first small step in this next great era of space exploration. I'm really excited personally that we were able to have two of the great STEM education crusaders from our space family with us in Washington when we rolled this out. Nancy Conrad, affiliate Pete Conrad, and who's the president of the Conrad Foundation, and Jude Scobie-Rogers, founder of the Challenger Center, who were there, soundly endorsing the initiative and already working with the foundation to help collaborate with nationally prominent educators, organizations, and other space experts to design what we hope will be a compelling, comprehensive K-12 educational program with a lot of other outreach strategies and channels to maximize the overall benefit to America of this project.
You know, I hadn't heard that Nancy was involved, Jeff. I mean, you don't need a rocket anymore. She's just going to take this thing with her to herself to Mars. What a force of nature she is. And June Scobie-Rogers, obviously outstanding. Are the outreach and the marketing and the merch, are the T-shirts available yet? The patches, the T-shirts, the coffee cups? I mean, I got to have one.
We're we're still working on getting the website up. We've got a make do page out there that we were able to cobble together quickly to support the announcement. But yeah, all of the trappings and basically all of the channels that we want to create for people to be involved and engaged and become a part of this are all in work. They're all in the plan and we're running as fast as we can.
You know, you and I have known each other a long time, Jeff, and I've heard your tone of voice in a lot of different projects and scenarios and environments. You're having fun with this. This sounds like this is a lot of fun.
You know, space is getting to be a really busy place. There's a lot going on. But there isn't anything that inspires me, partially because of my background, as humans exploring beyond low Earth orbit again. And I was thrilled when the phone call came in and we were asked to lend a hand with this.
Let's spend a couple minutes just because I want to highlight some of the other things that Griffin's working on, and you being the senior guy for aerospace. This is not the only client you have that's doing some interesting things in space. Can you talk a little bit about some of the other stuff you guys support there in Houston, up to and including the Coalition for Space Exploration?
Sure. Yeah, you bet. We're a full-service strategic communications firm. We service the aerospace, energy, and technology industries. And these are industries that we believe have the potential to have more impact on our lives and on our futures than really any other. We really consider ourselves to be more than just service providers. We consider ourselves to be stakeholders. I mean, so we seek to lend our skills and experience and services to those who are out there pushing the state of the industry and making a difference. And we're blessed to be working with some of the leading edge players out there in civil and commercial and private space, including the Coalition for Space Exploration, as you mentioned. But also Boeing, Lockheed Martin, Orbital Sciences has got some exciting stuff coming up soon, the Johnson Space Center, but then also Virgin Galactic, Blue Origin,
right.
and some others that you might not have heard of, like Fisher Space Pen Company, mm-hmm. the International Symposium for Personal and Commercial Space Flight, and SSC, formerly the Swedish Space Corporation, now, sure. of course, Inspiration Mars, led by Dennis Tito.
That's just absolutely outstanding, and the Virgin Galactic, the commercial space stuff, the commercial space tourism. That's sounding like that's gonna maybe start ramping up here pretty quick. From what you're saying,
yeah, I mean, 2013 really has the potential to be a watershed year, a real tipping point in terms of maturing and solidifying this new, you know, commercial supplier paradigm with NASA and as well as with, you know, private space. There's a lot going on.
That's great to hear. Jeff, stand by. We're going to take our final break. And then when we come back, we'll get you updated on the next launch coming up here from the Cape. And we'll pose our five terminal count questions to Mr. Carr. Stand by for all of that. I'm Jim Banky. You're listening to Space Talk right here on WMMB.
If you missed part of the show, catch the podcast, Space Talk, in the on-demand section at WMMBAM.com. Listen to Space Talk on the web at WMMBAM.com.
And welcome back again as we begin our final segment of today's edition of Space Talk with your reminder that you can stay in touch with us online throughout the week. Your first and best stop, of course, is online on the web at WMMBAM.com, keyword Space Talk. There you can find links to an archive of past Space Talk shows, text versions of orbital inclinations, and an occasional update of space news from time to time. You can also follow us on Twitter using the handle Space Talking, and we have a Space Talk page on Facebook that you can like as well. All right, let's take a look at the local launch forecast. Our next space shot remains targeted to fly this Tuesday afternoon. A United Launch Alliance Atlas V rocket is scheduled for blastoff again this Tuesday, March 19th at 5:21 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. The launch window extends for 40 minutes until 6:01 p.m. Eastern. The weather forecast looks pretty good for Tuesday's launch attempt. Now, a cold front is expected to be coming through the area here at launch time, so there is a chance of some isolated showers. Overall, the chance of acceptable conditions during the 40-minute launch window stands right now at 70%, so that's pretty good. Riding atop the rocket will be a space-based infrared system satellite, the second of a new generation of missile warning spacecraft intended to replace the aging Defense Support Program Constellation that has been up there serving us for some time now. The Atlas V is fully stacked inside its assembly facility at Complex 41. It'll be rolled out to the launch pad on Monday in anticipation of the launch again on Tuesday, when liftoff is now targeted for 5:21 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And you can be sure we'll do our best to bring you live coverage of that launch right here on WMMB, beginning just a few minutes before the planned liftoff time. For more information about these and all the various other launches scheduled around the world, jump on the web to WMMBAM.com, keyword space talk, and look for the link to our launch forecast. Okay, we just have a few more moments here with Jeff Carr, Senior Vice President for Aerospace for Griffin Communications Group in Houston. And I guess I would be remiss, Jeff, if I didn't just quickly ask you how your dad, Jerry's doing, Skylab 4 commander. What's he up to these days?
He's doing great. He's retired and enjoying life and learning how to use Facebook.
Is he really? That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Hey, listen, Jim, I wanted to there are a couple of really cool milestones coming up in the space business for your listeners to know about. And I wanted to mention that Orbital Sciences is on the verge of demonstrating another viable commercial option for ISS cargo resupply.
Yep, coming up in
they're
April.
They're using a medium-class booster called Antares, which could, in addition to serving the ISS, really begin to put pressure on the one-size-fits-all culture that sort of exists in launch services these days. That test flight is set for the April 16th to 18th time frame, followed probably a month and a half later by a flight to the ISS. The other really cool thing is that Virgin Galactic is gearing up for powered flight testing, starting with an in-flight cold flow demonstration coming up here in the very near future that's going to be pretty spectacular and, setting the stage for, full-up powered flight testing leading to operations. So,
how near is near, are you able to say?
In a matter of days.
That'd be great. You know, we've been waiting for those powered flights. You know, we've seen the unpowered glider flights. We've talked about them on this program. We've talked about Antares, and to see both of them getting so close is very exciting and good for us in Florida to see not only the other activities going on, but frankly the competition as well. It gets the blood going and the adrenaline fired up down here at the Sunshine State, no doubt about it.
And it brings the best out of the people who are competing too, which is a wonderful thing to
see. Okay, Jeff, we got just a couple minutes, and we're gonna do terminal count now with you. It's a new feature we've been doing since we last chatted. We're gonna ask you five simple questions to get to know you a little bit better. This is not a quiz. There are no right or wrong answers. This is not a contest. So at home, please no wagering. All right, and I'm looking forward to this as a son of an astronaut to hear what you... And by the way, a shout-out to Gwen Griffin as well, the owner and operator of Griffin Communications, the daughter of flight controller Jerry Griffin. So it's great to have Griffin and Carr doing second-generation space stuff. Very, very, very cool.
Thank you very much.
Coolest rocket, Jeff Carr. What's your coolest rocket of all time?
Saturn V.
No doubt about it?
No doubt.
Now, would you put the Apollo capsule on top of that, or do you like the Skylab configuration?
Well, the Saturn 1B was cool watching it launch off of a milk stool, and then the Saturn workshop or the Skylab workshop on top of the Saturn V was pretty cool. But I there's nothing quite as dramatic as that little capsule with three guys in it on the top of a massive rocket like that.
You can't beat it. What's the first launch you saw in person or that you remember most clearly?
Let's see. I believe it was Apollo 12.
Apollo 12. Wow! Did you see it on TV, or did you happen to be down here?
No. I saw a lot of them on TV before that. That was my first trip to the Cape.
Wow! Yeah, nice and rainy day.
I was just struck by how slowly it lumbered off of the pad and sort of rolled and tipped. And I thought, oh my God, this is going right into the ocean.
And then you were struck by lightning. Okay, most most prized space memorabilia that you own, real quick.
Oh, gosh, my Fisher space pen that my dad flew with. I've got it framed, and if I had to use it, I still could because it still writes.
It still writes. Best space TV series or movie?
Star Trek.
Star Trek. Which one? All of the above or original?
No, the original television show. After my dad's flight, we had the opportunity to go visit Paramount Studios and see an episode, I think it was Tribbles, taped in the studios, and I got a chance to meet Leonard Nimoy and DeForest Kelly and William Shatner. It was cool.
That's great.
Very cool.
Moon, Mars, or beyond?
Oh, Mars. Come on.
Absolutely.
There's stuff going on Mars. And we're only getting to watch by remote control. Let's
get some people there.
Let's get there, guys.
Some boot prints. Well, Jeff, thanks for spending time with us today. It's always fun to chat with you. We haven't chatted for a while. You're doing great things. You're having a lot of fun. And anything we can do to help you here at the Cape, let me know.
Hey, if space isn't fun, you're not doing it right.
That's absolutely for sure. All right. Take care, Jeff Karth. There he goes from Aerospace Senior Vice President for Griffin Communications. Just absolutely a great guy and a lot of fun to deal with. Okay, let's see. Let's take a look here. Where are we at? Next week on Space Talk, we are going to have a very special guest join us by phone, America's first female space shuttle commander and pilot, Eileen Collins, will join us to share some of her memories and update us on what she's up to these days, which also, by the way, includes her imminent induction this year to the U.S. Astronaut Hall of Fame. So I do hope you'll make it a point to join us again next week as we talk with Eileen Collins. Let's see. Don't forget to that we have the launch this Tuesday, 5:21 in the afternoon. We'll be live on the air just a couple minutes before the launch. 40-minute launch window, 70% go. So we hope to be on the air for you to hear what's going on with that as well. Hey, that is it for now. Space Talk, a production of Mylos Solutions, and brought to you thanks to the generous help of our supporting sponsors, Space Florida, Boeing, Abacus Technology, SpaceX, United Launch Alliance, and Lockheed Martin. My thanks, as always, to Sean Williams for manning the ops station for today's program. Please join us next Saturday at 2 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time for another hour of Space Talk. Stay tuned now as WMMV presents a weekend edition of the Glenn Beck Program. I'm Jim Behnke, and we will talk to you again real soon.